anyone get faith? Where does faith come from? What is faith?
Scripture tells us that faith itself is a gift of God. If salvation is about us, it is not a gift. It is a result of work. If God's sovereign and sovereignly called me, then He has sealed me.
Welcome to the teaching ministry of Heritage Baptist Church in Ashland, Ohio. Each week, we bring you expository and practical teaching straight from God's Word. And now, here's Pastor Ben.
Turn with me to the book of Ephesians, chapter 4. We're just going to look at a single verse today. I didn't necessarily map this out this way, but the last three passages that we've looked at in Ephesians have all been single verse passages. And it's because each of these verses has some pretty profound ideas in them that I want to share an outline with you. And this is going to conclude chapter 4 for our study. Next week, Jared will be picking up as we move deeper and closer to the conclusion of the book of James. And then we'll get back into the Ephesians study in a couple weeks. So if you have your Bibles, Ephesians 4:16, I want to start with a little bit of a trivia question. It's nothing too drastic, but I want to start with this question. What is the medical term? What is the medical term when one part of our body grows disproportionately to the other part of our bodies? Does anyone know this? No? It's good. Good. That's a swelling, but that's a good idea. Anyone know this? It's not as complicated as you think it is. Kind of. That elephantism is a form of this. A simple term for it. Think about the X-Men. The X-Men are? Mutants, yeah, it's called a mutation, okay? So when one part of our body grows disproportionately to the rest, it's known as a mutation. What is the medical term when cells grow out of control, unbridled, and take over the rest of the body? Cancer. We know that one, right? So in both of these examples, we see something where growth can actually be negative if it's not proportional and balanced. And that's the idea that I want you to start with as we look at this passage. This is what Paul tells us in Ephesians 4, verse 16. From whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. J.I. Packer has this brilliant summary of this verse from Paul. He says, Paul uses again the analogy of the human body. He reminds us that believers are not given gifts for their own private benefit, and also reminds us that nobody can grow into maturity in isolation. Paul himself strives for a knowledge of the Son of God that comes to maturity only when all believers attain it as well. And there's a few different ways that you could paraphrase that quote by Packer, but maybe one of them is to suggest that we are only as strong as our weakest link. Another one is to suggest that we do not have the privilege of moving forward and leaving others behind. Another is to suggest that if somebody is growing too rapidly, it can actually occur at the detriment of other people. And we hear the idea over and over implicitly in this passage of the concept of balance and love. So let's start at the beginning with this phrase, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies. First of all, let me ask, present in the congregation, I'm reading from the New King James this morning, do we have any notable translation variances from joined and knit together by what every joint supplies? Jody?
At NIV, it says joined and held together by every supporting ligament.
Joined and held together by every supporting ligament. Very good. Do we have any others? Any others? Mark?
Fitted and held together.
Fitted and held together. What translation is
that? NASB.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else? Rhonda?
Under his control, all the different parts of the body fit together and the whole body is held together by every joint with which it is provided. So when each separate part works as it should, the whole body grows and builds itself up through love.
What is the translation?
GNB.
GNB. Okay. Anything else? Jamie?
I find it interesting. The original King James uses the word compacted.
That is interesting.
It says fitly jointed together and compacted by that which every joint supports.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. There's some really good language in here. And I wouldn't have any huge disagreements with the Greek and the translation into anything that you guys shared. This is a huge point that Paul reminds us about. Everyone has something to contribute. The church doesn't work unless every one of us does our part. Our parts themselves may be different, and our struggles often come when we either don't recognize our part or when we don't think our part is particularly important. So let's talk about those two ideas. Our struggles come, number one, when we don't recognize our part. What are the ways in which someone can find themselves as part of a church and they do not recognize the part that they are to play? What are the various ways in which that might happen? I don't know where I fit in, where I belong, or what it is I am to do. Jody?
Well, I've experienced that when I've attended larger churches.
Sure.
It's easy just to come in and out and never really get plugged in.
Okay, so a larger church maybe breeds the opportunity for anonymity. If that is what you're looking for, it's harder to do that here in a church like this, certainly. So sometimes the simple task of where do I fit in is that the choices are overwhelming and we don't really know, so we just stay quiet and we just become consumers at that church and we do not become contributors at that church. And that would definitely run against the thought that Paul has here. What are other ways in which we may fail or someone else may fail to recognize our part? Jamie?
Sometimes I feel like I'm just average at everything.
Oh, okay.
It'd be nice to have one good thing instead of, so you don't really know where to go because you're not really great at any one thing. So
yeah.
Where do you?
Yeah, it's not necessarily clear to you what your gifting is, right? Okay, so what do I do? Let me tell you the best acrostic I've ever heard if you need to know what it is you do well. You guys have probably heard me say this before, and for some of you, this is a message of great joy. But in this church, Jesus, and by proxy, myself, are looking for fat people. Who knows what I mean when I say fat people? It is not P-H-A-T, girls, no, okay? It's F-A-T, we're looking for fat people. Jody?
Faithful, available, and I don't know what it is, trainable?
Teachable, yeah. Faithful, available, teachable. So sometimes, Jamie hits the nail on the head, we come in with an erroneous preconceived notion that I have to know what my gifts and strengths are to contribute anything to this church. Satan loves that, because if you're a shyer person, that leads to you not saying anything because I don't know what I'm supposed to contribute, so I'm just going to stay quiet, and then you do that for 20 years. Okay? Faithful means you continually come and be part of the program. Available means when called upon, you're willing to take up the mantle. And teachable means that you're willing to be corrected and trained so that you can become better and more proficient. Nowhere in faithful, available, and teachable does it suggest that you need to know what you're good at. A subcategory of not knowing what you're good at is, and I don't like this one as a pastor, when somebody thinks they're really good at something they're not. That can be difficult. When Mary and I were in seminary, we attended this small church up in southern Indiana, very similar to Heritage. We felt very much at home there, and we loved the church, and we loved the pastor. We were friends with the pastor. He lived in the same apartment complex down in Louisville and attended the same seminary that Mary and I were going to. And I felt so bad for him because there was this one middle-aged lady that loved to sing. And she was awful. I mean, she was YouTube cringe-worthy, epic fail awful. And every time she sung, the people just smiled through gritted teeth and bore with her for 5 minutes. And I just remember thinking to myself, I am so glad I'm not Pastor Todd, because I wouldn't know how to tell her, let's see if there's another thing for you to do. So sometimes the crux is, the rub is, we don't know what we're good at. Sometimes it is, we think we're good at something we're not. And that requires a gentle leadership, a pastoral hand, to help find the place for you. And this is not to say one thing is all you can contribute to the church, but to recognize in general what your strengths and your abilities to serve may be. Pastor Jared.
I'm thinking of, what about about oversaturation? Somebody thinks they have to do it all. I know that Katie and I can attest to that in a large congregation. You have 1,000 people and 50 people are doing all the ministry. So you get
Hack my computer this week?
What's that?
This is the second time this week you've gotten to something right before I was about to get to it. Yeah.
No, just thinking about it. Yeah. Because, you know, how many times, you know, the pastor sometimes is afraid to come in and ask you, well, you know, maybe you better, you know, pull that back a little bit.
Yeah.
A pastor needs to also be able to see, okay, this person's wearing themselves out. They are.
Absolutely.
We can't do that, or they're going to leave. You know, we're going
to
lose them.
And I need to be particularly careful about that, and you need to be particularly careful about that, because we have limited resources and we still have work that has to be done. So I don't want to overtax Brad. I don't want to overtax Andy. I don't want to overtax Jody. I want to appropriately tax you. I want to appropriately challenge you. So I would say, when I look at the congregation, I'm not going to call out names here. I'm just kind of telling, this is how it's always been. I would basically break everyone as it relates to this topic into three categories. You're doing just the right amount. You're doing too much. You're not doing enough. And so part of it is, that if you're right in the middle, that makes my job fairly easy. If you're on one of those extremes, I have to rein you in one way or the other and encourage you to become more part of the program, or to tell you to take some things off your plate because I'm afraid that you're burning yourself out. And that's a very, very real thing. So let me give you a story from Zeb Ziak, who is our former music director, who's been over at Grace West Main for about 5 or 6 years now. He chased a girl over there, and they got married, and now they have a family and all that. But outside of that, he's one of my oldest friends, and he shared this story with me probably about 3 or 4 years into his stay here. And Zeb was a very slow burner. He came in having had some bad experiences growing up in a Baptist church, so he was pretty reluctant to come here to begin with. And it was probably 2 or 3 years before we began to discuss ministry, and before we began to discuss him becoming a member, even though he was here faithfully week after week. After he became a member, I was able to slowly encourage him to use his considerable talents and gifts musically to lead our music ministry team for, how long was it, 4 or 5 years? Yeah. And Zeb's own account of that is that he truly felt like he became part of the church, not after he started attending and not after he became a member, but after a ministry was given under his dominion, under his responsibility, and he felt he became a crucial part of the church. So what is crucial? Crucial is, when you're not here, the church is different. That's it. When you're not here, the church is different. We want you all to be crucial, contributing parts of this church because of what Paul says. Join together and knit together. And what are they knit together by? They're knit together by what every joint supplies. We are only as strong as your contribution to the church. So you actually hurt the church when you sit at the back and do not get involved, and you slip in now quietly and say your hellos and shake your hands. You're actually hurting that. You think you're helping the church because you're saying, I'm not burdening anyone. I'm not overstepping my bounds. I'm not overplaying my hands. And that's actually a fallacy. That's not what's happening. What's happening is the church is suffering because you are not willing to give what you should. Now, let me ask you a medical question. Let us say, for an instance, that I have a degenerative hip. Maybe some of you have had similar things. If I do not address through surgery, therapy, medicine, or treatment this degenerative right hip, what can we be guaranteed will happen to my left hip?
It'll follow suit.
Why, Mark?
Overcompensation.
Yes. Yes. The work of the right hip does not go away. It gets transferred to the left hip. And so while you have one hip that is suffering from lack of use, the other one suffers from overuse. So if we are on the spectrum where we are underusing our gifts, then that means there's somebody on the other side of the spectrum that is having to make up the slack. And on the other hand, if we are overzealous and doing too much more than our share, it means that the person on the lower end of the spectrum is now atrophying because they're not getting the opportunities to serve and contribute. And we need to pull everyone into the middle of that. Now, this is the next thing that Paul says. They're knit together by what every joint supplies, and according to what? Well, it's according to the effective working by which every part does its share. So to what Jared just said, you guys have probably heard this overly true statement about churches. 90% of the church work is generally done by 10% of the people. A parallel that is common is 80% of the church giving is contributed by 20% of the people when you're talking about finances. Now, I will tell you, in full transparency, I do not believe that either of those scenarios is the case for us here at Heritage. I don't believe that's our case financially. I don't believe that's our case in terms of how we're using our human resources, but I do think there's room for improvement. So let me ask this question. I have three answers, but I want to hear from you before I share mine. Let's look at that 90% of the church work is done by 10% of the people. Why is that? And this is regardless of the size of the church, the location of the church, the denomination of the church. It's often regardless of the theology of the church. Although I would say if the theology and doctrine is strong, there's smaller chance of this happening because we recognize and implement verses like this. But why do you guys think, just off the top of your head, that most of the work is done by the smallest amount of people? Brian?
They're paid employees, so they have incentive.
Our church currently has a huge staff. We have more employees than we have ever had in the history of our church. We're up to three. So that would be myself and Jared and the huge stipend that we pay Brad. There is a point at which, well, they're being paid. They're being compensated. And I certainly fit this bill because of the length of time I've been here, the position that I hold, and the amount of money that I make. I hold this position more than anyone else in this building. So there is part of a default, well, he gets paid to do that. Lori?
Because you're already doing something, and you're out there on Wednesday night doing this thing at the church. Can you do this one more little thing?
Yeah. It's almost like your availability and faithfulness bites you. Because I know as a pastor, I can hand this over because this person's already proven themselves trustworthy. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I hope they don't, but I can basically sublet it out to them. Jamie.
I know we have the same issue with soccer. Mm. We have all these parents, all these girls, and some of them from split families, but it's always the same four families that run the concession stand.
Yeah.
Every game. And when you ask somebody about it, they'd be like, well, you do a really good job. Or we think you enjoy it. Or you understand the food service side of it better than I do, so we'll just let you handle it. And I think we get that same mentality here at the church sometimes. It's like, well, you must really enjoy the music, or you're really good at being part of the crew that serves the food and stuff. So I'm not going to step in there and think about that.
You do such a good job with it. What a crock of crap. That is somebody absolving themselves from their responsibility in this. And I remember when Jenny came and started being part of our music team a couple months ago, she was very, very concerned that she not overstep her bounds, that she not feel like Jamie was intimidated or being driven out. And Jamie laughed hysterically. He was like, you have no idea how welcome you are. You have no idea how much I am welcoming of you and your faithfulness and your availability. Okay? Jody?
I think sometimes we don't ask, and so it's not readily, people don't know when there's a need.
Yeah.
You just either do it or we give it to somebody that you know will do it, but we're not making the need evident.
Yeah. I would add a small asterisk to that. I would also say that sometimes the failure is on leadership's lack of wisdom in connecting the need with A, who might be good at meeting that need, who B, is not necessarily doing anything or doing as much as someone else. Leadership tends to just say, give it to the person that'll get it done. And most of the time, do you know who the first person that comes to my mind when I say give it to someone to get it done? I know you all want to say Andy. I know you do. But the answer is me. No, it's not even Jared. I've had to learn I remember Jared had been on staff 6 months. I was on the other side of town. Someone was here to try to get into the church to do something. And my instinct was to go. I was with Mary in the car and she said, call Jared. And I was like, I don't want to bother him. She was like, and we were like in Mansfield. And Jared was like sitting on his front porch 5 minutes from here. And I felt guilty. And he was like, yeah, sure. I'll be there. I've had to get better. And part of it is I've not been used to having someone to be able to hand those things to. But part of it also is, if I'm being very honest with myself, if I need it to get done, My ego says, do it yourself. That way it gets done right, it gets done quickly, it gets done to your specs, and that is a joint sin. That is a joint sin when I do that, because it's ego, it's pride. It may be simpler to do it, but I'm not helping somebody else to grow when I just do the work for them. Jared.
I was thinking of the hierarchical churches, like, you know, that have a national affiliation. Sometimes it's dictated from above. Who can do what?
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, your clergy, your lay, you can't do this, you can't do that. And so some people are limited by what the church will allow them to do.
Yeah, and our church, according to its constitution, does have some parameters to that. Let me give you an example. Only an ordained man can serve the Lord's Supper. So in our congregation, that's three people. So that's what we have available. And I do think that those parameters are appropriate. But you guys know this. I'm not telling you anything revelatory. We have lots of opportunity. We have lots of opportunity not only to be part of something, but to be part of the ownership of something, the leadership of something. So here's my three ideas. Here's the question. Why is it too often true that 90% of the church work is done by 10% of the people? I think there's three main ideas, and you guys have actually brought up some of these or added to them. One, let's be quite frank, particularly in America, some people don't want to serve. They just want to consume. They just want to receive the message, receive the teaching, receive the fellowship, receive what the church has to offer, and they don't really have an interest. They're either because they're too busy or they're not spiritually driven or they're spiritually immature. They just don't want to do it. Secondly, to point the finger at me, leadership fails to both recognize and cultivate the skills and gifts of individuals within the congregation. Because I tell you what, it's a lot harder. It is more rewarding and it is more biblical, but it is more difficult for me to find the gift that Josh brings to the table, cultivate and encourage that gift, and then give him something to do. It's much faster, and in many ways it's much easier if I just do it myself, or if I lean heavily on Andy and Jared and Brad and Mark, who are already in the mix. The problem is, if I don't get Josh plugged in, then Josh, because of me, not him, he just becomes a consumer. And he is not contributing. Because the weight and stress is being taken away from this hip and placed on this hip, and the body is not healthy. Third idea. And we didn't talk about this one, but oh my gosh, it's a big one. It's the opposite of number one. Number one is some people don't want to serve. Number three is some people want the glory, and therefore they do the work. They want to be the people in charge. They want to be the shot callers. How dare someone impede upon them? I have a friend 10 years ago who was part of a church staff, larger church than ours, and they let their Sunday school director go, not Sunday school, children's ministry director go after she had been there 25 years. Anybody want to do that meeting? Cornerstone of the church, matriarch of the church, and they canned her. And I went to my friend and just said, hey, I heard so-and-so has been relieved of their duties. I don't mean to gossip, but can you give me some insight, pastor to pastor, what happened? And he said something so profound and hilarious that I was like, ooh, I get that. And he said, I think the simplest way to answer your question, Ben, is to say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? And I said, sure. Said, yeah, if that wheel keeps squeaking, you eventually get a new wheel. And what had happened, right? I thought that was brilliant. That serves as a warning that the 10-year that we have served in a position does not give us free licensure to operate without accountability in that arena. And that's what had happened in this position. This person had basically operated with total impunity and no accountability because that was her baby, that was her program. She answered to no one, not the senior pastor, not the elders. And that is not a healthy church. That's the hip saying, I'll do it all, but no, it's mine. And that also leads to this unbalanced, unhealthy Christian body. Solution. Two parts to the solution to these issues. Figure out what your part is, number one. And number two, do it for the right reason, which is the glory of Christ. So let's unpack that just for a minute. To figure out what your part is two-way street. It's leadership going to the people and saying, what do you think your gifting is in? What do you think you bring to the table? What might you be interested in? It's also the people in a church like this having direct and easy access to the pastor and the staff saying, hey, have you guys ever thought about doing X, Y, or Z? It's Katie coming to me 2 years ago and introducing AHG. And through other means, Shauna, you said a few weeks ago, the main reason you guys are here is because we supported AHG and that was important to you guys. So we see ministries grow when the leadership doesn't think they've got the market cornered on the vision for the future of the church. And those of you like the Ronks and the Mills and Jody who have been here years upon years upon years, you would say our church has probably gone through 3 or 4 identity shifts or you know, without changing the theology. We had a period of time where for whatever reason, we had 25 college students here every Sunday. And no other church in town could boast that. So we really built into that. And then that kind of died out. Even though we tried to keep it going, we tried to keep the torch lit, it just kind of organically died out. And we've had instances where we've had community groups that were thriving, community groups that were dying, and Wednesday night prayer meetings that were thriving and then dying. We've had so many iterations that we know that part of this equation is listening to the Spirit, but then also as the people within the church have changed, it means not only is the church personality different, but the strengths and weaknesses of the abilities and arenas in which these people might serve has changed with it, and we need to be responsive to that. So number one, figure out what your part is. And that's a discussion with me, that's a discussion with Jared, that's a discussion with your spouse. Number two is do it so that Christ is glorified, not you. Josh.
I think a big thing for that is as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, coming from a church that I served every other Sunday
mm-hmm. on the security
for
team
for 5 years,
yeah,
and was told, you know, Wednesdays I had to be there. It was more of a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't enjoy going to church. It was, I had to go do my job. And I, as much as I loved it, it's like, well, I have to be in there. And I was told, well, you know, we have 2 services, so. I mean, well, my grace group is the second service.
Right.
So I don't get to go sit and be fed. Well, that's kind of your prerogative. And there was no communication there. You know, that's the nice thing about here is, you know, anyone can sit down with you and say, hey, this is how I'm feeling, and this is, you know, what this ministry needs, or we need to address this. And in a bigger church, you couldn't do that.
I mean,
there was multiple things from me being there from inception of Grace's security. I was the second person to ever sign the paper.
Right.
Until
the day you left.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I could never, it was, well, the elders have to talk about it. Okay. Well, we were busy. We'll talk about it next month. Well, we'll talk about it next month. And it never got talked about.
Did you get bitter?
Oh, I hated it. I mean, it was to the point of when I left, it was a more of a, well, why don't you want to do security team anymore? Not why don't you want to come to church? Well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, you're the security team leader. Yeah. Like, what?
Do you feel like both from your own perception and the perception of people who knew you, your identity became consumed with security team?
Yeah.
Yeah. And boy, you're a lot more than that. I mean, I know that after 6 months. There is so much more to you than the fact that you're a former Marine and a good shot, you know? And we pigeonhole, box people in, limit them, stereotype them, and keep our horizons so low when we reduce someone to a task that they provide. So we absolutely have to be healthy. Second thing I want to speak to what Josh said is the first thing that he said. It is absolutely essential that you recognize that one of the advantages of a smaller church is that you ought to have direct access to me and Jared and Andy. You absolutely ought to expect that, and we ought to absolutely be responsive to that. And that should give you the feeling of we play more of a role. We're not just a cog in a mighty machine. We are engineers that help design and cast the vision and future of this church because we are a body supporting each other. What is the result of this working properly? Look at the end of the verse. The last thing that we see Paul say is he says that this causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Here we see the wonderful result. When we recognize our part and do it to the glory of God, we all grow. We, in love, encourage the growth of others when we grow. How many of you have had a situation where you marveled at another's growth or wisdom or maturity, and you did not feel dejected, you just felt motivated? You wanted to step up your game because you were so encouraged by how someone had grown into a position. Not out of a sense of competition, not out of a sense of jealousy, but out of a sense of true encouragement and motivation. Their striving made you hungry to strive. Their hunger for Christ made you hungry for Christ. That's a picture of a healthy church. And finally, the last two words of this passage, Paul reminds us of what he has been talking about for the entirety of the first half of the book of Ephesians. The words in love, selflessly, sacrificially, earnestly, in love, quietly, humbly, tirelessly, in love, joyfully, peacefully, efficiently, in love.
Thanks for listening to this message from Pastor Ben Roby and Heritage Baptist Church. We welcome your feedback or questions. You can find us online at hbcashland.com or connect with us on Facebook. If you found this message helpful, please share it with a friend or loved one. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week.